Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are not recommendations, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.
Hello and welcome. I'm David Thornton, Senior Journalist at Money Magazine, bringing you today's episode of Friends with Money. Contracts for Difference, or CFDs, have long been used by professional investors to gain leveraged exposure to securities. More recently, they've soared in popularity among retail investors looking for strong returns. But is the risk really worth taking? Joining me to discuss this is Peter Campbell, a financial advisor at Meridian Wealth Strategies.
So Peter, CFDs have been around since the 90s, yet their popularity has really exploded the last couple of years. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, look, to be honest, my opinion, it's really around all the attention that investing is getting at the moment. So it's a very easy tool at the moment because product providers have come to the table, or platforms, I should say, to make it very easy for your average investor to access, which is not necessarily a good thing. They were originally created for sophisticated investors, for very high-end financial institution operations in terms of hedging, etc. But now they're really being used to speculate on the underlying assets, and that's really where we're seeing a lot of the growth and interest in them coming from, especially when you're thinking about things like cryptocurrency and GameStop, which is very, very visible as a get-rich-quick scheme at the moment. Naturally, CFDs are turned to very, very quickly.
They've seemed to explode in popularity as volatility has also exploded the past couple of years. Is that just a coincidence, or is it, are they, you know, profiting off that volatility?
Yeah, look, I'd say definitely not a coincidence. When it comes to CFDs, if you're thinking about it from a platform perspective or the provider, they are making money every time a trade is placed. So they make money through what's called the spread. So whenever there's lots and lots of transactions taking place, they're essentially sitting back and making a lot of money, which is appropriate because they're providing a service. But yeah, that would explain the provision of that whenever people are willing to transact en masse, and the providers are remunerated through things like spread or just clipping the ticket on the way through. Absolutely. We see what we're saying at the moment.
So, I mean, a contract for difference is obviously a contract between two parties. If the investor does make money, is the CFD provider assuming that risk? So do they lose, you know, essentially what the investor has made?
You're quite right. There's a lot of counterparty risk here. So when we're talking counterparty risk, that's the industry term for whenever you're looking at the provider, can they actually pay us out when they're balancing the books, et cetera? So a contract for difference is a cash settlement transaction, which means that the underlying asset, let's say that it's a CFD on gold, for instance, it's not been owned at all. It's a contract for difference. The difference in the price from the purchase or the opening and the closing of the CFD, that's what's been settled by cash between the parties. And I would suggest that's why we're seeing a lot of regulation in this space at the moment. It's really arcing up. Things like leverage or essentially margin lending are being very heavily restricted by the Australian government and ASIC at the moment. And if we look overseas, it's actually illegal in the United States of America. The SEC has said CFDs are not allowed over there at all.
So that's quite interesting that it's illegal over there, given their the risk appetite investors in America have compared to here. Example I'm thinking of is SPACs. Our regulators seem quite reluctant to approve SPACs, yet over there, they're going gangbusters despite not really making a whole lot of money. So why do you think that is, that this case they've sort of come down hard on CFDs?
Look, to be honest, I think it's another three-letter acronym for everybody to be a bit worried about. So when we had the package mortgages over there with the global financial crisis, they were very much amidst all of that, but a financial sector got really heavily smashed, essentially, by regulators sweeping in and saying we need to control what you're creating. And that's what a CFD is. It's a financial instrument that's created by the financial services sector to be able to quickly take positions for hedging purposes, and it does have valid uses. But as soon as there's speculation involved, that's where regulators get very, very nervous, because that's when retail investors start to come onto the scene, and you're talking about mum and dad operators, retirement savings, etc., which is just hanging out there.
What advantages do CFDs have over, say, futures or options?
It's very quick here and now, very low cost as well, so you're not necessarily putting down premium for those kind of positions, and much easier accessible. And what I'd suggest as well, it's accessible because it's very easy to sort of explain. If you go long, if you buy, and if the asset goes up, you'll make money. If you go short, then you'll make money if it goes down. However, when it comes to options, when you're talking about buys and puts, etc., that's an entirely different ball game, and they are more physical sort of transactions rather than cash settlement.
So just unpacking the risks a bit more, I guess sure. When you're talking about CFDs, the leverage is really where the bodies are buried. Is that right?
Yep, absolutely. So it's been CFDs have been around a long time, as you said before. They really burst in popularity when it comes to the retail side on foreign exchange trading. So currency pairs, I did trade currencies in a former life, and I used CFDs to get access to currency pairs, and I used leverage to my benefit to do so. However, it's also to your detriment. So if you had, say, argue $100, okay, $100 down, and you had a leverage of 300 to 1, then you can just imagine you're essentially taking a $30,000 position with your $100. And as that $30,000 goes up and down, so does your profit and loss. And if you think about how quickly currency can change, that can be very fast money, but you can also be rapidly losing money as well. So this is why I believe the government has really stepped in, because I'm sure that there are many stories out there that we're not privy to of investors behind the scenes that have lost a lot of money. And when you're talking about leverage, you're essentially using money that you don't have. You're using the bank's money or the provider's money. And if a severe market event happens, and all of your risk controls that you've got in place, like stop losses, etc., get what we call gapped. So if the price skips over them, then you are essentially on the hook for that.
So you mentioned there how the regulators stepped in to implement ratio limits. But, yep. I mean, for major currency pairs, last October they implemented 30-to-1 limit, which still seems excessive to me, to say the least.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you think about where it was once upon a time, it's quite a while ago now for me, but I do vaguely recall when it was around the 300 mark, and I don't think I was really gearing up as much as I could have. Potentially I could have gone to 500 or 600 for argument's sake, so to 30 times, it is definitely still a lot, all right? So if you put all your life savings into that instrument and you geared it up 30 times, you can only imagine the damage that has the potential to do if you were to lose all of that money. But, yeah, it's a step in the right direction. I don't think it's the end of regulation in Australia in this space, especially as retail investors become more and more interested and it's taken up a lot more. And that's been driven by the sort of social investor phenomenon that we're seeing happening at the moment.
Peter, to play devil's advocate a little bit, we leverage property in pursuit of the great Australian dream. So why not do it with shares, currency and the like?
Yeah, look, I think it's down to understanding what you're investing in. And if you're thinking about the average mar and par that sits down in front of a Facebook ad and it says, you know, sign up here to get involved in CFD trading and be able to trade GameStop and Bitcoin and all the exciting things. It's an instrument that is not commonly understood. Whereas when you're borrowing to buy a property which is tangible, okay, and there's a physical asset and you actually own it there, I think that's an entirely different prospect. A prospect with its own implications, absolutely. We are very, very heavily overgeared here in Australia on a per capita basis, but we're getting something for it rather than taking out a position and trusting that we're going to get paid out on the other side.
Can retail investors trade on margin responsibly at all, or is that something you advise your clients against?
Look, I don't advise my clients trade with gearing unless we are having it very much as part of their advice. Okay. When it comes to gearing, no, I don't think people really understand it. They just see it as a big piggy bank to dip into and use, and it's financial muscle. And it is, I think, to be honest, I think that people realise how powerful it is when it's actually working against them. And by that time, it's too late. So whenever I've got people that are looking at these things and the very fixed and they want to do it, my role shifts from being that devil's advocate to say, to saying, okay, how are we going to support you through this? And really it's down to education, practicing, using demo accounts, making sure that they really understand what this market is like before they commit real money, and gear on top of that.
By the same token, should short selling be undertaken by retail investors also? I mean, it seems to me like in recent years, styles of sophisticated investing have creeped into retail investing.
Yes. Yeah, very, very true. Because there's money to be made, right, when you're thinking about the service providers and platforms. They're just thinking about how can they package up a new product to see out the next 5 to 10 years. So, I think that short selling is something which is not going away anytime soon. Whether or not it should be done by retail investors is a really interesting question, and one that's being wrestled with worldwide at the moment, especially when you're looking at the GameStop, the very easy example, the hedge fund that had to be bailed out, etc., which, as I understand it, they just took another position higher up and made more money on the way down. So I don't think, it's really breaking the hedge fund or anything like that.
Peter, the Reddit crowd would argue that if sophisticated investors can do it and make money from it, why can't retail investors do the same?
Yeah, and it's a really good point. I think it needs to be regulated. It needs to be a fair playing field, but what that looks like, without having mass financial disruption, when you're talking about how intrinsically linked the share markets and financial markets are tied to growth and the value of everything, then understandably regulators get a little bit worried. But we haven't seen any major moves in terms of banning the short selling just yet. So jury's out, I'd say, on that one. From my point of view, I think that people should be allowed to do what they want and partake in the market as long as they understand it. So if there's a way of satisfying a hurdle on an investor-by-investor basis, that it's, you need to, a good justification would be that if they're able to pass some sort of quick quiz or test or something like that to prove that they actually understand what they're doing, then on their heads be it. But right now, it's as easy as open an account and fund it, and you're in.
I feel like speculating with CFDs, it's quite similar to the casino in terms of the cognitive biases you can fall victim to, like the hot hand fallacy, etc. If you get a couple of wins, then that sort of motivates you to go again, and then it can all come unstuck quite quickly.
And it is a very gambling mentality. I mean, you just have to think about the Reddit page, Wall Street Bets, right? It's gambling. It's putting money down. It's hoping that you you put it all on black or red, or you hit a number and you get 36-1. All this mentality comes into it, sort of like chips on the table. And I mean, whenever I'm talking to my investors, my clients about investing, from my standpoint, investing should be very boring. Mm-hmm. It should be, yeah, old faithful. We've got a strategy. We're contributing to it, or whatever it might be. And we're just year on year, we know what to expect. As soon as your heart's racing and you're a bit excited about an investment, that's when I generally ask the question, are we taking too much risk on here? Okay. Are you making too much? And that might be a little bit counterintuitive, but if you think about it, how much risk do you need to take on to take your investment 5 or 10-fold? It's actually a lot. Feels good when you're winning, but you could just as easily wipe out half your position or more.
I guess you can have too much liquidity also. You know, you talk about other assets like property, which may or may not be easy to flip, but CFDs, you know, I mean, there's no underlying asset, but in a sense they have high liquidity. You can enter and exit a position very quickly, and I suppose that works against long-term investing.
Yeah, absolutely. And to a good point, just bought a gambling mentality, right? Easy in, easy out. And let's go again, or let's double down and try and recover our losses here. That's something which you know, potentially we could see regulations or restrictions coming in terms of frequency of trading, size of positions, that kind of thing. I think the gearing side is just the start of that piece.
Do you have any parting words of wisdom for listeners who might be thinking about dabbling in CFDs?
Yeah, look, as I mentioned before, practice. You can take out demo accounts with the major providers. Get a real feel for charts, okay? Understand where the asset's been, where it's potentially going in the future. Be very, very careful with your position sizing, and do your research. So have a real look into investor behavior. How quickly can this thing move? What would I do if it did move? How much am I willing to lose? Okay, on a per trade basis, what's my target in terms of how much I would like to earn per trade, and set your stop loss, which means that it automatically closes off if you're losing a certain amount, or your limit, which means that you automatically take the money off the table when you hit a certain profit amount. Set them religiously is my absolute advice, because when we're losing money or when we're gaining a lot of money, that's when we become our own worst enemies. We don't actually act. We don't act as rational people. We become very irrational when we believe that our loss is going to recover in the future, or we're going to keep on making millions of dollars if we just hang on to this position forever. So be very, very structured, have a plan, a trading strategy, write it down and follow it to the letter if you're going to do this. And absolutely, if you're in a position to do so, seek advice. Financial advice is very, very powerful when it comes to providing knowledge and guidance around the different options that you've got, and CFDs is certainly not the only tool in our arsenal.
Well, that was great, Peter. Thanks for taking us through CFDs. I'm sure our listeners got a lot out of it.
Absolute pleasure.
We look forward to having you back on soon.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider your personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any of the content without further independent financial research and advice.